Our communication channels remain open. North Korea knows they're open. They know where the door is. They know where to walk through that door when they want to talk.
But North Korea calls the latest sanctions against them an act of war. This is Tuesday, the 26th of December, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Remember, we would like you to be part of this program. Join us, please, on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, many displaced Rohingya are finding new ways to generate an income in their Bangladesh camps. And the Australian Federal Police use a unique channel to spread the word about its success over drug gangs. North Korea said it is a pipe dream for the United States to think it will give up its nuclear weapons and called the latest UN sanctions to target its country an act of war that violates its sovereignty. VOA's Steve Miller gathered together the elements that led to these latest sanctions.
John Hyland reports that North Korea has called the latest round of United Nations sanctions against it an act of war and tantamount to a complete economic blockade.
North Korea described the latest UN sanctions against it as an act of war on Sunday, saying it was tantamount to a complete economic blockade. In a statement, the country's foreign ministry threatened to punish those who supported the measure. The UN Security Council unanimously imposed new sanctions on Pyongyang on Friday, following its recent intercontinental ballistic missile test. The measures seek to limit the country's access to refined petroleum products and crude oil, with a near 90% ban. The UN also wants to curb earnings from abroad, with a demand for the repatriation of North Korean workers within 24 months. The US-drafted resolution, supported by longtime Pyongyang allies Russia and China, commits the Security Council to further sanctions if there's another nuclear test or ballistic missile launch. In November, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un declared the nuclear force complete after the test of the isolated nation's largest ever missile, which it said puts all of the United States within range. It denies its nuclear program is in contradiction of international law, but rather a self-defensive deterrence. The latest statement described Washington as getting, quote, more and more frenzied in moves to impose the harshest ever sanctions and pressure on the country.
That was reporter John Hyland. Russia's RIA news agency reports that Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov called for the United States and North Korea to start negotiations on Monday. Both China and Russia have called for a so-called dual suspension or freeze-for-freeze option, which would call for the freezing of joint U.S. and South Korean military exercises while North Korea freezes its testing. Speaking at the United Nations earlier in December, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson responded to that suggestion.
We do not accept a freeze for freeze as a precondition to talks. We do not accept any relaxing of the sanctions regime as a precondition of talks. We do not accept a resumption of humanitarian assistance as a precondition of talks. So we are not going to accept preconditions for these talks. But as I indicated in my remarks, our communication channels remain open. North Korea knows they're open. They know where the door is. They know where to walk through that door when they want to talk.
Secretary Tillerson also said that North Korea's growing nuclear capabilities are a direct threat to the United States and that Washington will use all necessary measures to defend itself against such aggression.
Monday, the Chinese government urged countries to act with restraint and work to ease tensions after North Korea called the latest U.S. sanctions an act of war that violated its sovereignty. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying said Monday that nations should exercise restraint and make positive and constructive efforts to de-escalate tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Beijing also asked all relevant parties to impose the latest sanctions in what they called a comprehensive and balanced manner. The UN Security Council unanimously approved tough new sanctions against North Korea on Friday in response to its latest launch of a ballistic missile that Pyongyang said could reach anywhere on the U.S. mainland. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Russia and China urge a peaceful resolution to North Korea tensions. Pakistan allows the family of a convicted Indian spy to see him. A Philippine storm leaves thousands in shelters at Christmas and then takes an aim at Vietnam. China's military flybys raise alarm in Taiwan, and Rohingya refugees face financial problems in Bangladesh. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOANews.com website. In Pakistan, authorities have allowed the wife and mother of convicted Indian spy Kulbhushan Jadhav to visit him Monday, reiterating the step was taken purely on humanitarian grounds. Officials said the meeting lasted about 40 minutes and took place at the foreign ministry shortly after Jadhav's family members landed in Islamabad. Jadhav spoke to his wife and mother through a microphone from behind a specially arranged glass partition. The Pakistani Foreign Ministry spokesman, Mohammad Faisal, told reporters the Indian Deputy High Commissioner in Islamabad was also permitted to accompany the visitors. The diplomat could see Jadhav, but was not permitted to speak or listen to the conversation among the family members. Faisal made clear the reason for the visit.
To reiterate, let me be very clear that Pakistan permitted the request by India purely on humanitarian grounds. The visit was allowed in line with Islamic practices and teachings. Islam is the religion of peace and advocates mercy. It is a gesture of good faith and compassion.
Jadhav's relatives left Pakistan for India late Monday. This was Jadhav's first meeting with his family since he was arrested in March of 2016 for entering Pakistan from neighboring Iran with fake travel documents, they said. A military court later tried and sentenced him to death in April of this year, ruling the serving Indian Navy officer was found guilty of espionage and running a deadly terrorist network in Pakistan. India says Jadhav is a former naval officer, but rejects the charges against him as baseless, saying he has no connection with the government. Happening now in Asia, authorities in Vietnam are attempting to move a million people from low-lying areas along the south coast as a typhoon approaches after battering the Philippines with floods and landslides that killed more than 250 people. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you are with us. Please continue to be with us. Many Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh facing diminished income are supplementing their needs with work in the camps. Steve Sanford talks to a few young and old entrepreneurs who have set up new businesses in the refugee zones.
The winter season has arrived for more than 650,000 Rohingya refugees who have fled a brutal crackdown by Myanmar forces in the last 4 months. Supply chains for food and shelter are slowly getting organized, but the wait is long and supplies are short for those with big families of more than eight.
They give us 10 or 12 kilograms of rice, but it is not enough. That is what they give us every month, but I've not gotten more than 10 kilograms of rice.
The World Food Program has delivered more than 20,000 metric tons of rice to 185,000 households, but admits it's not enough.
We're actually looking at targeting families and family size much more clearly. So we will look at increasing the ration size for a family of 4 to 6, and also those who are 8 plus will also get double. We need to address the need of people telling us we're hungry, we don't have enough food.
A recent camp survey from rights group Medicine Sans Frontier reports at least 6,700 Rohingya were killed during the attacks in Myanmar, and satellite imagery shows 40 more villages with building destruction in November, bringing the total to 354. As the evidence mounts, the consensus among most experienced crisis workers is not a surprise.
Having gone through all these traumatic situations, you know, seeing their brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers killed in front of them and being raped. It is not appropriate, according to the communities, to return immediately.
As of December, the total number of refugees in the camps stands at nearly 860,000, including those who came before the most recent crackdown. And refugees like Mohammed Omar don't show any signs of packing for home.
We won't go back to Myanmar easily unless we get our rights. If we go there, they will cut us and kill us and shoot us, so we won't go back yet.
The Myanmar government has long denied allegations of atrocities against the Rohingya, but it is not clear when or if the Muslim minority group will be able to return. Meanwhile, the humanitarian crisis in the refugee camps is likely to continue well into 2018. Steve Sanford reporting from Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
Now this news alert from VOA Asia. Afghan officials say a suicide blast early Monday in Kabul killed two intelligence officers and four civilians while injuring two others. The bombing occurred near a security checkpost on a busy road in the capital. Officials say the bomber apparently wanted to target Afghan security forces and instead hit a civilian car. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. In the face of a diphtheria outbreak in parts of Indonesia, authorities have embarked on an immunization drive to slow the advance of the dangerous respiratory disease. VOA's Kevin Enix reports. Faith Lapidus has the narration.
The immunization drive and public awareness campaign began in mid-December with a focus on vaccinating children below the age of 19. It's in response to nearly 591 reported cases. A 42% increase this year.
In my opinion, diphtheria is a deadly disease and it needs to be prevented. So with these kinds of programs, we can avoid it through immunization.
Indonesia has one of the world's highest rates of diphtheria. Even though a vaccine has been available for almost a century, there is public mistrust of vaccines, forcing health officials to make calming fears part of their efforts to contain the disease.
This is a necessity. It's not all unbeneficial. This is what needs to be emphasized. These vaccines have been carefully prepared, and that medicines and vaccines are strictly necessary because it is for the benefit and welfare of the people. Therefore, we cannot simply refuse it.
Jadi memang saya selalu mengatakan bahwa tolong untuk obat, untuk vaksin, ini adalah mutlak, karena untuk kemaslahatan. Ini adalah untuk kesejahteraan, untuk kesehatan masyarakat.
More than 30 people died of the respiratory disease in Indonesia this year. Media coverage has led many citizens to seek out the vaccine.
Wabah seperti ini, penyakit ini panik banget lihat di TV ya. Karena kan bisa mematikan ya. Enggak yang kecil, enggak yang besar, enggak sampai tua ya. Paling takut saya kalau ini. Paling mengerikan ya penyakit ini.
That's why I'm very keen on getting my child vaccinated so we can avoid this disease.
Menghindar penyakit tersebut ya.
Hospitals in Jakarta report an average of 11 diphtheria patients a day, most of them children. For writer Kevin Enox, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
A news alert from VOA Asia. The small bus carrying churchgoers to Christmas Mass has collided with a large, long-distance passenger bus in the Philippines, leaving at least 20 people dead. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Australian Federal Police, the AFP, have released a comedy parody of the 12 Days of Christmas Carol to celebrate their successes against drug gangs this year. It comes as the AFP announced the seizure of a record consignment of methamphetamine from Sydney. Phil Mercer has more.
The Australian Federal Police have released a comedy parody of the 12 Days of Christmas Carol to celebrate their successes against drug gangs this year. It comes as the AFP announced the seizure of a record consignment of methamphetamine. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
All throughout this year, the AFP has seized drugs in washing powder, ice in a light plane, meth in protein powder, liquid ice in water.
What?
The AFP posted its parody Christmas video on Facebook. It says that drug traffickers and organised criminal gangs have been no match for its crack team of elves, which has found consignments in some unusual places.
Drugs in someone's bowels.
Yuck!
The role of the Australian Federal Police is to combat transnational and organised crime. Its festive video has gone viral.
If you have information about a possible drug importation, call Santa on 1-800-333-000 to have them put on the naughty list.
And we're looking forward to 2018.
Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh my God!
And the serious work continues. The AFP said Friday it had seized Australia's biggest ever haul of methamphetamine. More than a ton of the drug was found during a raid at the port of Geraldton in Western Australia. AFP Deputy Commissioner of Operations Leanne Close.
We think it's timely at Christmas that we've now been able to stop this activity. We've taken the 1.2 tonnes of drugs off the street, and that equates to probably about $1 billion worth of border control drugs that are now no longer going to be on the streets of Australia over this Christmas period. The operation has required our officers to work around the clock in recent weeks investigating this matter.
Authorities believe the consignment came from China. Eight men have been charged. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Philippine officials say firefighters have found the remains of all 37 people who became trapped when a shopping mall went up in flames in the southern city of Davao. Fire broke out Saturday, but extreme heat and thick smoke prevented firefighters from retrieving all of the bodies until Monday, according to Davao's mayor, Sara Duterte Carpio. One body was discovered Sunday. Authorities say the victims worked for a U.S.-based company in the mall. The regional chief of the Bureau of Fire Protection, Wilberto Rico Neil Quantiu, relayed the news to the employees' relatives on Monday. The U.S.-based market research company, Research Now SSI, which said it employs about 500 people in its local call center operation, confirmed Sunday that 37 employees were lost in the blaze and that it's offering counseling to workers and condolences and prayers to the families of the victims. Taiwan is facing a new source of pressure from rival China as the communist government increasingly often sends military aircraft to skirt the island, a challenge to the local armed forces. Planes from China flew near Taiwan in November and December, raising concerns last week at a presidential office in Taipei. Over the past 2 years, Chinese military units have sent planes 10 times just outside of the Taiwanese air defense zone, according to the former Taiwan defense minister Andrew Yang. China considers self-ruled Taiwan as part of its territory that must eventually be unified. Officials in Beijing resent Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen for not accepting their One China principle, which would bind the two sides under one flag as a condition for any talks. China is conducting the long-range flights in part to warn Taiwan against moving toward formal independence at the risk of a military strike, according to analysts. Shane Lee, a political scientist at Changzheng University in Taiwan, said they'll try to test Taiwan's government's will to defend itself. They believe that continued threats will really bend Taiwan to its claim. Two sides have been separately ruled since Chiang Kai-shek's nationalists fled to Taiwan after the Chinese Civil War. But the government in Taipei has never declared official independence. Surveys in Taipei show most Taiwanese people oppose unification. China, by the way, runs the world's third most powerful military after the United States and Russia. Taiwan's armed forces rank number 18, according to the database globalfirepower.com. You're listening to VOA Asia from the Voice of America. A new film from Netflix, Bright, starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, mixes an alternative universe Los Angeles with the world created by J.R.R. Tolkien, the Lord of the Rings. As VOA's David Byrd reports, the film uses fantasy and action to address serious issues in modern American society.
Will Smith said at the premiere of the new film Bright that audiences have never seen a movie like this before. Imagine a mixture of Training Day and The Lord of the Rings, complete with L.A. violence, gangs, a magic wand, fairies, orcs, elves, and a dragon. The elves in this movie are the haves, the orcs are the have-nots, and the humans are somewhere in the middle. Smith plays L.A. cop Daryl Ward, an African-American police officer who is racist against orcs. Australian Joel Edgerton plays a rookie orc named Nick Jacoby, the first of his race to be in the LAPD, who is teamed with Smith's character. One night, in response to a call, they discover a powerful artifact, a magic wand that grants wishes, something that everyone seems ready to kill or to die for. If that's a little hard to get your head around, Smith says that that's part of the point.
You can go to these fantastical worlds and spaces, and you can say things that in the world of Bright about our society that you normally wouldn't get to say, or it would just be too harsh. But at the end of the day, the movies, it's entertainment. It's fun. It's exciting. It's wildly creative. The mashup of these worlds, I think, is really creative. And, I do love some of the statements that the film's making.
Everybody's just trying to get along and have a good life.
All of the races are different. Just because they're different doesn't mean anybody's better or worse than anybody.
Hey, where's the diversity at?
I got a dude in my car. I didn't ask for it, but the whole world is watching.
Boy, it's okay. You don't like me.
Man, I'm not out here to be your friend.
Edgerton, who underwent several hours of makeup every day for the film, also provides some of its comic relief.
And friends of mine have always said, the films you make are too dark for the kind of person you are. I'm more of a light-hearted human being. So it was great to do a more, even though it's an R-rated film, it's strangely also very funny. And I realized that maybe I had more freedom to do that because I had a mask on my face. And I really took to it.
The Aussie actor says that the chemistry that fans see on screen between him and Will Smith comes out of his real-life friendship and admiration for his fellow actor.
You can't buy chemistry. You can only hope that it exists. And a buddy cop movie is sort of like a bromance movie. It's like male romance. And, we had a good time together. Now our relationship in the movie, I think, resonates well, I think. Will likes me slightly more than I like him, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Director David Ayer, who worked with Will Smith on Suicide Squad, says the fantastic setting of the film allows it to address serious issues in American culture without being too preachy.
I think there's a few too many divisions in our world today, and it can be hard to talk about that. It can be hard to talk about the issues of have and have not and racial tension. But in a film like this, because it is a bit of allegory, people with their hearts and eyes closed can hear a message without feeling preached to.
Bright is available on Netflix. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, you have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. And let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook, also on our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kellen Fowler, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day and night.